Hello there and welcome back. We are continuing with our special edition on the Cold War for all those who are planning, of course, to take this exam in summer. And we are galloping on and having a look at the Korean War today. Quite a complicated issue, so I'll try and keep it nice and simple as possible and explore today some of the reasons actually why not just North invaded South, but why the Americans were particularly interested in that region. And then I think next time we might have a look at the sort of course of it and the upshot, the outcomes of the Korean War, why it's important. I'm going to start, though, with one of my all-time favourite Soviet jokes. And just to give you a little bit of background, this joke is about Brezhnev, who was one of the former Soviet leaders. He comes after Khrushchev. And his regime was known as a gerontocracy. So gerontocracy is basically a regime run by old people. So you might look at our current government and go, are there too many old people in that House of Lords? I don't know. Have a think about it, though. So a gerontocracy, I think the average age of the Politburo under him was anything, I've seen figures ranging from 68 to 70, either way, quite elderly, because there's not been a lot of change in the government. No one wants any fresh thinking or fresh ideas. So the joke goes like this. What has four legs and 40 teeth? An alligator. And what has 40 legs and four teeth? Brezhnev's Politburo. Hey, it's good, isn't it? It is good. So yes, let's carry on. If you haven't had a look at the historyrocks.co.uk website, you might be interested in some of the little question papers and things that you can try out there. These are not, of course, endorsed by AQA, but they're produced by myself, by my own hand, and they come with full mark schemes. So that might be a good little bit of practice ahead of summer. So let's get into it. Korea. Koreans had basically been occupied by Japan since about 1910. So it was never really an independent country for many, many, many years, all the way up until, of course, the Japanese surrendered during World War II, following the bombing of Nagasaki and Hiroshima. Japan started withdrawing from some of the countries in Asia. And it happened quite quickly. I think the Americans and the Soviets were a bit caught out by this. They didn't really have a plan for Korea. In fact, Korea was never really on the radar for the Americans. They never really saw it as a significant part of their security strategy. But either way, what happened was is that they were going to divide Korea along the 38th parallel into sort of zones of occupation, with the idea that they were going to have some supervised elections run by the United Nations. But essentially, the two sides, the Americans and the Soviets, could never really reach a proper agreement about the reunification and how that should take place. So consequently, we end up with two separate states, two separate countries. So in the north, of course, led by Kim Il-sung, largely communists, of course. And then in the south, Syngman Rhee, non-communist. I wouldn't say he's democratic or liberal or anything like that. So steer clear of those sort of labels, because his regime is notoriously oppressive. But non-communist, nonetheless. And that had some backing from the Americans. So when the Americans and the Soviet Union began withdrawing then from sort of occupying the country at the end of the war, we end up, and it was always, I think, going to happen, with a civil war. The North communists invade in 1950, and hence the Korean War begins. So I guess what I'm interested in particular, is why the Americans get involved in the first place, given that Korea was never seen as a particularly significant country to them. They weren't really that interested. In fact, much of Truman's containment policy thus far is focused upon Europe, barring a bit in China, of course. Well, the fall of China actually is really significant. So for Truman, and we spoke about this earlier, for Truman, this was a significant loss. People were accusing him of being weak or soft on communism. Following on from that, of course, we got the Soviet development of the atomic bomb in 1949. We've got the publication of NSC 68, which reaffirmed this belief that Stalin was sort of orchestrating the spread of communism across not just Europe, but now into Asia, and that there was a need to meet it with a big increase in conventional and nuclear weapons, etc., etc. It was actually Truman who parked that NSC 68 initially. He didn't want to spend or increase taxes in any way. He believed, you know, it was just too much. It was too difficult. He didn't want to do it. But this, again, sort of created this view that Truman was being soft. Further to that, of course, we've got McCarthyism sweeping across the US at this point in the early 50s, obviously fueled by the claims of Senator Joseph McCarthy, that he knew of 57 cases of individuals who would appear to be either card-carrying members of the Communist Party, or in some way sort of loyal or sympathetic to the Communist Party. And it included, of course, members of Truman's administration. So that, with the loss of China and the publication of this white paper that was critical of the American foreign policy to do with China especially, NSC 68 coming out, the fact that the Soviet Union seems to have developed an atomic bomb, all leads to this sense that Truman's foreign policy, his containment, was too defensive, that he was too soft, that, you know, it put pressure upon him because he didn't want to be seen as losing Korea. So you've got to sort of build this up into a big picture. Further to that as well, the reason, I guess, why the Americans are so keen or interested in what's going on in Korea is because they have just been spending some time beginning to restructure Japan. And that became more important, of course, after the fall of communism, the fall to communism of China as well. So Japan, they've already beginning to sort of restructure it. And Japan is going to become even more important with the North's invasion of the South in Korea. So they really step up then their efforts. But they were concerned that Japan was vulnerable because of the spread of communism in that region. So the Americans are very keen, Truman in particular, is very keen to demonstrate that he is going to take firm action and he's going to stop the spread of communism in that region. They want, of course, from the American standpoint, they want reunification. They would prefer it under Syngman Rhee, a non-communist, you know, and all of this combines for the point that they send in, you know, just within 2 days of the invasion, lots of air and naval power, lots of, you know, sort of weapons and assistance under the guise of the United Nations, because, of course, the Soviet Union had been boycotting the United Nations because China wasn't allowed to take a seat there. It was given to Taiwan. So that's how the Americans were able to use this sort of umbrella, the United Nations umbrella, to suggest that it was an international effort to stop the northern invasion. From the Soviet Union perspective, despite what the Americans believe about Stalin orchestrating everything, yes, they would have liked reunification of Korea under Kim. Of course they would. And yes, it's true, they boycotted those United Nations elections that took place in South Korea in 1948. So, you know, they're not being particularly willing or helpful in that sense, I guess. The USSR is particularly keen to have a friendly government in Korea because it would allow them access to certain raw materials, for instance, particularly interested in sort of hydroelectricity that they could gain from the region. Equally, of course, they are concerned when the Americans get involved, but they were certainly reticent from the beginning. They were hesitant. They weren't. When Kim came to Stalin with his plans, Stalin was a bit like, you know, he was a bit concerned that this would bring in the Americans into the conflict. And it was Kim that was trying to persuade Stalin, actually, that no, this is going to be a quick war. It's, you know, we've got all of the support that we need to win it, support in the South as well. It's going to be, it's swift. You know, the Americans are not going to get involved. And Stalin basically said to Kim, look, you need to go off, you need to redraw your plans, come back, and he did. And then he was like, okay, giving cautious approval to Kim's plans, but I want you to go and speak to Mao of China to see what his thoughts are upon it. And basically the Chinese were like, yeah, I think, you know, this is going to be fine. But, you know, let's support the northern invasion. And of course, we end up with the Soviet Union sending in military advisors and equipment. And of course, the Chinese get involved as the Korean War, a certain phase during the Korean War, when the United Nations troops appear to be moving closer to the border that China shares with North Korea near the Yalu River. And it's at that point that the Chinese actually do properly get involved in that war. From the, I guess, from the issues of sort of Kim and Syngman Rhee as well, I mean, it's quite easy to sort of blame Kim for the outbreak of the Korean War. But, you know, Syngman Rhee shares some of the blame here as well. I mean, there's been conflict along the border, along that 38th parallel, for quite a few years. Well, you know, since at least 1949, if not earlier, where there's been sort of shootings and things like that along the border. And apparently, Syngman Rhee had been, you know, shooting his mouth off about how he was going to use force to get the reunification of Korea, that this could happen at any point. So you might, I guess, if you're going to be really sort of, I think it's a bit of a reach, but if you're going to really stretch it, you might say, well, what Kim did could have quite easily been done by the South, and maybe it was preempting a potential invasion from the South. I don't know. I don't think we'll ever really resolve that properly. But either way, the outbreak of the war brings all of these players into a sort of proxy war, and the Korean War itself was not particularly successful for anyone, really. We just end up back to the 38th parallel in a bit of a stalemate. And that's the end of it. So, okay, we'll have a look a little bit more detail then next time we get together about the actual course of the war, and especially the impact of the war and what that means for not just costs in terms of human lives and things like that, but also for the developments of the Cold War thereafter as well, particularly thinking then about Vietnam and Asia at large. So I hope you found that useful. Do keep revising, you know, do keep revising. It's really important that you're spending the time, you're burning that midnight oil to get prepared for these exams. God, we must be about 50 odd days to the first one now. So yes, keep working hard. We've got Easter coming up. Make sure you get your head down. And I'll speak to you soon. Have a jolly good day. I salute you.